Good evening. Time for another bedtime story with Thompson. This is The Swiss Family Robinson by Johann Wyss. We are on Chapter 10, Terror at Felsenheim. As Jack slowly sank into the quicksand, only Grizzle heard his frantic cries for help. The poor bewildered mule came running to the edge of the marsh, where he stood braying loudly. Realizing now that no one could hear him beyond the dense wall of willow trees that surrounded him, Jack made one last effort to save himself. Twisting and turning, he managed to get his knife out of his pocket and cut two large bundles of willow twigs. These he wedged under his arms. Miraculously, they buoyed him up so that he was actually able to make some headway toward dry ground. He whistled softly to Grizzle, who inched closer and closer. Then Jack grabbed the mule's tail and clung for dear life. As Grizzle tugged and pulled, Jack felt himself being carried forward. In a matter of minutes, he was on safe ground. As Jack staggered into camp an hour later, I asked him, "Where have you been to get so dirty?" "Flamingo Marsh." "What on earth are you doing there alone?" I demanded angrily. "I wanted to surprise Mother and make some nests for her pigeons. I went there to get these willows," he said, tossing down the muddy reeds. "But they're too thick, I'm afraid. The worst thing was that I fell in the quicksand. I escaped just in the nick of time." "Oh, Jack!" Elizabeth cried, rushing up to Jack and embracing him. "Thank heaven you're safe. Now promise us you won't undertake any expeditions alone again." "I promise, Mother," Jack replied sheepishly. "I'm sorry if I worried you." "See that you remember that promise," she said firmly. "At least we can use these twigs to make baskets in which to carry our grain. Now the first thing you must do is get out of those muddy clothes and take a bath in the river." "Better make it snappy," I added to Jack. "There is still much work to be done before we officially move into Felsenheim." The major problem we faced was that of lighting the grotto. Except for three rooms which had windows, the cave was in complete darkness. Finally, I hit upon a scheme. I took a bamboo pole that was the same height as the grotto and planted it in the ground. I then gave Jack a hammer, a pulley, and a rope, and asked him to make the pole steady. In a moment, he was at the top, driving the pulley right into the ceiling. He pulled the cord over it and jumped agilely to the ground. I then tied the end of the cord to a large lantern from the ship and raised it to the top. Once the lantern was lighted, the whole cavern was aglow. "What a beautiful sight," Elizabeth exclaimed. "It's amazing how the sides of the cave reflect the light." "It's like broad daylight now." "Good thinking on your part, Papa," Jack chimed in. While Jack and I put the finishing touches on the workroom, Ernest and Francis took charge of arranging the shelves in the library. Besides the Bible, the ship had contained books on history, botany, voyages, and travel. We had also found maps, a globe, and dictionaries from other lands. We all knew a little French, for this was spoken as much as German was in our native Switzerland. In addition, I encouraged my sons to master the English language. My inspection of the maps and charts had led me to believe we were somewhere near Malaysia, so I struggled to learn the Malay tongue. As our work at Felsenheim neared completion, we saw black clouds gathering on the horizon. Lightning flashed and thunder roared. Winds swept over the coast, billowing waves rose, and for 15 days we had the worst storm anyone could ever imagine. However, we were happy and secure inside our grotto. What would have become of us in our treehouse at Falcon's Nest? And how could we have withstood the storm in our tent? At last the rain stopped, and we ventured out again. Fritz, whose eagle eye had led him to make most of our discoveries, suddenly cried out, "Father, come look! There's a strange animal on the other side of the river near Falcon's Nest, and it's coming this way." "What do you think it is?" Elizabeth asked, running up to me. "I've never seen anything like it before," Fritz said in awe. "First it moves forward, rolling itself up into large rings. Then it stops and unrolls itself again. It stops, it starts, and then it marches on once more, but I can't see either its feet or its legs." "Here, Papa, look through this," Ernest said, handing me my spyglass. Pointing it in the direction of Falcon's Nest, I shouted, "Why, it's a huge serpent! Dark greenish-blue in color. It must be all of 14 feet long. Hurry, Francis, hurry! Everyone, run back to the grotto as fast as you can. It's a boa constrictor." Once inside Felsenheim, we bolted the door, barricaded the windows, and waited in silence for the arrival of our enemy. When it was about 30 paces away, it stopped as if it sensed our presence. Ernest pushed his gun through the door and fired. Jack, Francis, and Elizabeth followed his example. Although the monster raised its head and fell back, the shots did not even penetrate its scales. Fritz and I then fired in rapid succession, but it was useless. While we all watched in stunned disbelief, the boa constrictor slithered away toward the marsh where our ducks and geese lived. "What are we going to do?" cried Fritz. "We are powerless to kill him." "I'm afraid we have no choice but to remain inside the grotto. No one is to open even the door. That's an order." For 3 long days and nights, we maintained our vigil at Felsenheim. Our position was a dangerous one. We knew that the boa constrictor was still inside the marsh because of the unrest among the fowl. Yet, an attack upon it by my family might cost a life. On the other hand, none of the animals would stand a chance against it. To make matters worse, our animal's fodder was nearly gone. Finally, I said to Fritz, "You attach the animals together with a strong rope and lead them across the river to graze. I will post myself on a rock above the swamp and keep an eye on the serpent. Elizabeth, you must be in charge of the door." Unfortunately, Elizabeth didn't wait for my signal and opened the door before the animals were securely tied together. No sooner did Grizzle see a ray of light than he shot out the door like an arrow. "Come back, Grizzle," we called, but he never stopped. He headed straight for the marsh, and we watched in horror as the snake rose up and shot out its long, forked tongue. End of chapter 10.
Coming up next, chapter 11.
Good night.